Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Jesse Green here. Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Today, we're going to be delving into the art of storytelling, but particularly we want to unpack what that might mean for your practice and how to use that in the marketing of your practice. And so I've invited Valerie Koo from the Australian Writer Centre to join us. Welcome, Valerie. Thanks for coming along.
Oh, it's great to be here, Jesse.
Fantastic. Well, it's actually nice to be having a conversation because I know we get to catch up at numerous business events around the place, and you're regarded by everyone that I know as kind of the authority when it comes to storytelling. So you've got this amazing reputation in that space. Have you always been good at storytelling?
I think I've always been definitely interested in storytelling and analysing how stories are told. And I guess over the years, once you do that for many years, you become pretty much an expert at it. So I've always been fascinated, even as a young child, on how they structured that story. I know it's a really weird thing to be interested in, but I would read the newspapers or I would read feature articles in magazines and work out, right, they put that bit there so that they would suck me in, and then they would put that bit there so that they would explain it a bit further, and so on. So yes.
So it sounds as though that there's an art and a science to storytelling.
In a sense, but essentially it needs to be something that resonates with your listener or your reader or your viewer or whatever it is. So it needs to be structured in a way that is tailored to them, in a sense.
Okay, cool. So, storytelling seems to be almost a bit of a hot topic in marketing circles these days, and I'm not sure that storytelling ever really went away. But why is it that it seems to be kind of a bit of a buzzword these days? Why is it so popular, do you think?
It did go away, actually. It didn't go away in the world of the arts. It didn't go away in the world of movies or books or anything like that. But I think what happened during the 2000s and starting in the late 90s was, technology advanced so far that we had Excel spreadsheets. We started collecting data analysis and manipulation and intelligence became so much easier than ever before. So especially in the business world, not so much in the art world or, the creative world, in the business world, so many people jumped on the data bandwagon and they made pie charts and they made line graphs and they made infographics. They sliced and diced their data in so many different ways. They loved presenting, whether in their white papers or their PowerPoint presentations or even on their websites, their data represented in different ways. But they often forgot to tell the story framing the data. So in a sense, it was still there. It didn't go away completely, but it got overshadowed by this newfound embracing of data and data manipulation and data analysis. So, everything's cyclical though, of course. So once we got over the fact that we couldn't just have the data, don't get me wrong, I think data is really important. I mean, I'm a former accountant. I deal with numbers.
Yeah.
So I think numbers and data is really important. But once people got over the fact that you can't just present it, you actually need to present it in a meaningful way and present the context around it, which is the story, then storytelling started making a resurgence because you couldn't actually make sense of one without the other.
Okay, fantastic. So it's really interesting that you say that because in dentistry, we all talk about evidence all the time and there's this huge push for evidence-based this and evidence-based that, which again, like you, I'm a huge fan of data. But I remember going to a dental seminar. It was about last year. It was a large one. There's a whole heap of people. And I remember the slide up on the PowerPoint was a graph of some sort, like a table with numbers upon numbers upon numbers. And it was illegible from where I was seated in the audience. And the presenter started off his presentation, and I kid you not, by saying, I know you can't read that, but. And so it seems like from the very outset, he lost his audience. So I guess what I'm hearing you say is if you'd contextualize that with a story and then added some strategic numbers in to highlight his points, that would have been a better way to go.
Absolutely. And that's where you can take data like that, where you can't read it, and represent it in a much simpler form graphically, but then tell the story behind it and people will get it and resonate with it rather than sit there and strain their eyes and think, oh my God, you're crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm asleep in 5 seconds flat.
Yes.
So, Valerie, you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that when you were younger, you used to analyse the newspaper articles and you used to, I suppose, decode where they'd put various elements of the story and you had to hook you in and so on. Is there a particular framework or is there a formula for effective storytelling? Because I know some of the people listening to this podcast are going to say, great, I get that, but how do I do it? What is there something that they can structure to work with? Is there some sort of framework?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of frameworks, of course, but let's, I guess, talk about it in the small business context, which is probably the most relevant for your audience. And I think particularly in the world, say, of dentistry, what you might want to present to people are case studies or you know, examples of other people who've undergone certain types of treatment. So in that case, it's not just a matter of telling people all of the different processes and procedures within that treatment. I think what's really important is just to think of it, is to use a person to illustrate it. So that person can be anonymous. You can give them a, you know, you don't have to disclose the name of your patient, of course. You can just say a patient or say, we'll call him John or whatever. And think of it in three parts. And the first part being, what was John's situation like before the treatment? So I don't know what that might be, but he was in pain or he had an infection or whatever. But what was his situation like before the treatment? And, you know, describe it. Was it ongoing? Was it sudden? That kind of thing. So that people can relate to that, because they're not going to relate to the treatment and they're not going to relate to the methodology of the treatment. They're just going to relate to the pain or the situation that John was in. So one, that's part one. And then part two is, this is the treatment. And explain, this is what John went through and it's specific to him because of these reasons. And then part three is, here's the outcome of the treatment, but specifically what John felt and his, you know, reactions to it and his physical recovery from it or whatever it is. So I think that it's very simple in business to think of it in those three parts, particularly if you have a person like John leading you through the story, through the journey.
Okay. So, you know, essentially what we're trying to do is connect with John at an emotional level and then add in how he got from point A to point B through the treatment that we've provided, right?
Yes, very much so.
And I'm guessing, and I think I know the answer to this, but I'm guessing in the before and after part of that story, we want to talk a little bit more about John's, I suppose, not just his situation, but the implications of that situation, how it affected him emotionally to hook the story to the audience into that story.
Absolutely. It's not just his physical result or physical situation in the before and after, but definitely his emotional situation, his emotional pain, the impact on his life, the impact on his family or his relationships, if that's relevant. But here's the interesting part, is it depends also on how long your story is. If you're telling the story in a 500-word blog post, that is a great structure. If you're telling the story in a 90-second video, that is a great structure. But if you are telling your story in a 1,500-word article or blog post or a 3,000-word white paper or, you know, something that's a little bit longer, you actually need to hint at or simply explicitly tell the end result at the beginning so that people almost know what they're in for, so that they will stick with you to find out how he got to the end result.
So in that longer format, I guess the risk is you could lose them before they get to the end. Is that what you're saying? If you don't that up front. Okay, cool.
It might take too long to get to the punchline, so to speak.
Got it. Okay, cool. So, hey, Valerie, you've authored a book on stories, and I know it's called Power Stories, and there's a really wonderful quote on the cover of that book by Seth Godin, who, look, is a bit of a hero to me. I think he's one of the best marketers. But the quote he's given here is, stories, the ones we tell our customers and the ones we tell ourselves, are the most misunderstood part of marketing. And Valerie will help you understand what you've been missing. So, awesome quote, by the way. And kudos to you. I'd love that kind of quote on my book from Seth. But The key thing I wanted to ask you there is when it comes to the marketing of your business, what is it that we are missing? We've given the example of the case study there, but what other elements are missing when it comes to marketing our business, when it comes to storytelling?
I think it is very much that right structure and the right context. So, for example, if your demographic is, you know, women from 25 to 35, for whatever reason, if you're in business and that is your demographic, obviously don't be telling the stories of a 50-year-old and vice versa. So sometimes we get so excited that we have a story, but it's actually not
relevant.
It's not going to resonate with your audience. So that's one thing. And I think it's just important to really get into the mind of who you're targeting, your target audience, and think of, well, what kind of stories do they want to tell? And when I tell my stories, which elements am I missing? So does that market want to know whether, you know, does your target audience want to know a little bit more personal detail? Like whether, for example, if you were in business and you're a relationships counselor, it would be relevant for you, your case studies, to describe their age, their relationship situation, perhaps their relationship history, but that would not be relevant to a dentist, say. So it's very important to get into the headspace of your target market and think of those little things that are going to just make that story become even more alive for them.
Okay, cool. And so what I'm hearing you say really loudly and clearly there is understanding, you know, from a marketing perspective, you know, I suppose ground zero of marketing is who is your target audience and having absolute clarity about that and really understanding what's going on in their mind, what challenges they're having, what, you know, what frustrations they have and so on and so forth, yeah?
Yeah, very much so. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. And for anyone listening, we might attach a little form, which is one of the exercises we go through with our clients to get some clarity around that. So we might attach that as a PDF to this episode, Valerie, so people can get that part handled. But when it comes to, I suppose, marketing versus selling, and I guess this is perhaps where case studies come in a little more, are there different types of stories that you would use for selling or presenting different treatment options to patients as opposed to your marketing practice that go beyond the case studies? How would that impact?
I don't think the stories so much differ. I think the mode of delivery differs, particularly in the world, this day and age, where content marketing is such an important part of marketing and selling and ultimately selling. So in the past, there was no such thing as content marketing. You kind of got, you got marketing in the traditional sense, like brochures and letterbox drops and yellow pages ads and those sorts of things. But these days, people search for information, you know, whether it's about that kind of treatment or whether it's for a service provider in their area or whatever, and they search for information before making a decision. They basically research. So you want your content to be coming up, whether that's in a podcast or blog posts or whatever, in your market, in their search feed or in their results, so that they start to get to know, like, and trust you, so that when it comes to when they're ready to buy, in a sense, you're almost a done deal. So it's just making sure that you're reaching them in the ways in which they search. You're telling those stories in the ways in which they search, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, completely. So,
and you're doing it consistently so that they have already had a number of touch points. They've heard about you from here, or they've listened to you on a podcast here, or they've read about you here, so that, like I said, when they're ready, you're already a trusted brand or expert.
And this kind of comes back to that zero moment of truth study by Google, right, where you try to, you know, engage with people before they make their actual buying decision. Is that what I'm hearing there?
Definitely, definitely.
Cool. I love that. That's fantastic. So obviously we've made the case for being able to have stories as part of our marketing and sales funnels there. What are the hazards or pitfalls when it comes to storytelling? What would be the common mistakes that you see coming up time and again?
You tell a boring story or you think something's a story and it's not, like, don't tell the ending. It's very frustrating for a reader, listener or viewer or whatever when you talk about the fact that, oh yeah, we had a patient one who did X, and then you never tell the end of the story, you never tell the outcome, or you mistake a testimonial for a case study. It's not a case study. A case study is that before, during, and after. A testimonial is, yeah, yeah, he's great. He's a great dentist.
Yeah, 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 which sadly we're not allowed to use, but anyway.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Experience or for other businesses who might be listening or practice management people who might be listening, it's mistaking something that actually isn't a story into a story or telling a boring story or telling an unfinished story, which leaves, this is the most frustrating part, which leaves the reader, viewer or listener with more questions than they started out with.
I hope I'm not going to get into trouble here. I read a novel by a well-known Australian author, Tim Winton, The Writers.
Oh, yes.
And at the end of the book, it's completely unresolved. And I remember being so angry at the end of the book, and I threw it across the room. It was terrible because it was just unresolved drama and unresolved tension that was just left you hanging. So anyway, I completely...
You threw it across the room.
I know. And I've never read... There was the first and only book of his I've ever read, I have to say. But anyway, not to worry.
It's very frustrating. Is it? Well, you've experienced it yourself. So that's the thing, is that when people... You start telling stories to people and you finish and they end up with more... You need to have all their main questions answered.
Yeah. Just so be able to tie it up in a little bow. Mm. Fantastic. So what do you think, when it comes to storytelling, another word that gets used a lot is authenticity. Where do you see, I mean, obviously it's critical, I get that, but where do you see authenticity as being important in storytelling? And again, where do people come unstuck with that?
Well, I see it as important all the time in storytelling.
Yes, absolutely. let me ask a different question. Do you see examples where some stories just don't quite ring true?
Yes, it's not that they're telling lies. Well, I mean, maybe they are, but I don't. That's not the usual situation. Where you see something is not authentic is when it's very clear that the business or the business owner, especially if the business owner is, the face of the business, where they're actually not passionate about what they are peddling or what they do or what they are supposedly an expert in. And that's when it's dangerous, because they are telling those stories in a theoretical kind of format because they know that they should, but it's pretty transparent. It's pretty clear when somebody's not genuinely passionate about their business or what they're doing. And that's when even though the stories, if you analyze them, are technically fine, they're told in a technically perfectly fine way, there isn't that underlying emotional core to it that makes it seem real. Not that you think it's a lie, you just don't feel that connection to it.
Yeah. So I guess extending from that then is if you're listening to this podcast, and you're writing stories, write stories about things that you actually genuinely feel passionate about, yeah?
Oh, definitely. Because then other people just engage with it, because passion, people can recognize passion in other people or in their stories, and they get excited by it and they connect with it more, and therefore they connect with you more, because passion is palpable and people just don't buy into it if you're just, going through the motions and saying what you think you should say.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, another question that comes up that I hear some people talk about when they're thinking about writing either a blog post or an article of some sort or another is, where is the line between sharing enough and oversharing? Is there a line?
Oh, yeah, I reckon there's a line.
I reckon there's two, but still.
In the world of business, of course, there's a line. I mean, if you want to be out there and be a memoirist and, wear your heart on your sleeve, that's fine. But in the world of business, without a doubt, in my opinion, there is a line, because you need to maintain a certain level of professionalism, but that doesn't mean you need to be boring in any way. Because people say to me, I don't want to talk about my marriage, or I don't want to talk about what I had for lunch, or I don't want to talk about my kids. And I say to them, well, don't. It's not that hard. There's a real difference between sharing what's personal and sharing elements of your personality. And I think you should share elements of your personality without a doubt, so that people get to know the human being behind the business, and that's what they really connect with. But I don't think you should share what's personal or what you're not comfortable with, of course. So that, to me, that's the line. And people often get those lines blurred, and they think that they need to share intimate details about their life. You don't. You don't at all.
No, 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 absolutely. And I think, you know, particularly as you say in business, there is an element of professionalism that has to be maintained. And candidly, you know, I don't think my patients need to know exactly what my views are on any particular political thing or what I've had for breakfast or where my kids go to school and all sorts of stuff. But as you say, they get to know a little bit about the person behind the business. So that's really cool advice. Wanted to ask you a little bit as well, Valerie. You know, storytelling, of course, can go across a whole lot of different media. Obviously we're doing a podcast here, but you know, in business, it could be a blog, it could be a video. Are there any nuances to take into account as you move across, you know, different types of platforms or different media?
You mean, should they be different?
Yeah.
You know, the way you tell your stories?
Yeah. Are there any differences or are there any considerations to take into account as you're producing it and creating it and so on?
Well, obviously you need to work out what people like consuming and in the way in which people like consuming. So people sometimes go, okay, everyone says I need to be in video, so I'm going to go into video now. Without necessarily thinking, okay, just talking to Facebook Live or the camera about my day is not the most exciting thing on earth. You know, think about what people want to know from you if you are going to do a video, and also work out, well, what length, talking for 10 minutes about your day is so boring. So think of something probably, and you need to analyze your own target audience, but something that's short and sharp, maybe 90 seconds, no more than 2 minutes, and maybe it's something useful. Maybe it's a tip. Maybe it's a story or a case study. Sometimes I think people jump into certain platforms and you know, good on them for trying, but they don't necessarily do it with much structure. They don't think, okay, well, this is the kind of delivery that people would like, and so I'll tailor my delivery accordingly.
Cool. Lovely. A wonderful advice there. I'm going to ask you for a couple of hot tips as we wrap up the segment, Valerie. If you were, you know, and I know you do coach a lot of people in writing stories, but for the audience listening, as they're thinking, okay, well, I've got to get some stories into my business, or I don't have to, but I would like to. If there were, you know, three or four tips that you would think, you know, every storyteller should think about as they're constructing or distributing their story, what advice would you have?
The first thing is to write them down. The biggest mistake people make is they keep their stories in their head and they think that they don't need to write them down. But when they're in your head, they just stay in your head. When you write them down, you actually are forced to structure them in a good way. So, and I don't mean write down dot points or don't, and I don't mean write down, you know, story from uni, which is just a note to you, you know what I mean? Actually write the full story, because when you do it, it's just so much easier to tell the next time as well. So number one, get them out of your head and write them down. Number two, make sure that you have thought about and written down your passion story, because that can be one of the most powerful stories. As in, and what I mean by your passion story is why you do what you do. What is it that gets you out of bed every day? And what is it that, you know, makes you excited about your practice or about your life? I think that also with that, people sometimes don't want to admit their passion, because sometimes their passion is not related to their day-to-day work. Now, I'll give you an example of that, but I encourage people to think about their passion anyway and think hard about how you can link it to your day-to-day work. So, for example, my passion, I run the Australian Writers' Centre, which is, you know, Australia's leading centre for writing courses, and it helps people improve their writing and write with confidence, get published, all that sort of stuff. Now, my passion, even though I do love writing, my passion, my driving thing, the reason I wake up every day, is that I actually love helping people achieve their dreams, helping people see that what they once thought was impossible is actually possible. That's not necessarily to do with writing, but my technical skill is writing. So one place I can start straight away is help people achieve their writing dreams and their writing goals and change their lives by actually changing careers and that sort of thing. So I have to be honest with myself and say my passion is not you know, to get you to write that book, but it's get you to achieve that dream, which may be writing that book, that you've always thought was impossible. Do you see what I mean? It's a subtle difference, but it rings true for me. If it, and I can say it really authentically. So I encourage people who are listening to think about their passion. Don't dismiss it that it's not necessarily related to your day-to-day work, if in fact, if it's not, and see where the link is, because you've been in business for this long, there must be a link somewhere.
That's a really, really cool distinction. I love how you've been able to tie your passion back to your work. And I imagine that, yeah, everyone listening will be able to, you know, think really critically about, you know, why they do what they do, and hopefully be able to produce a story that resonates with that. Valerie, we've covered a lot of territory today. Thank you. And we've uncovered some good stories there about your life as well, in terms of your passions. On behalf of the audience, I really wanted to take an opportunity to say thanks for coming onto the show today and sharing all your wisdom and all your knowledge. And I look forward to seeing some of the stories that come out as a result of people listening to this podcast. So it should be a lot of fun.
Well, it was my pleasure, Jesse.
Thanks so much, Valerie. Cheers for that.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.